Welcome to Filthy Casuals Review, a game where two bumbling magic morons try to match wits with the best brains Limited has to offer, and Marshall Sutcliffe. Just kidding, love you, Marshall. Here's how it works. When a new magic set comes out, pro player Luis Scott Vargas and self-proclaimed food and beverage director Marshall Sutcliffe grade all of the commons and uncommons from the set on their excellent podcast, Limited Resources. Kenny and Seth have each done a blind review of the cards on their own. The goal? Get as close as possible to the grades the pros gave them. I'll let LSV explain the grading system.
A's.
These are your bombs, your game winners, just the best cards in the set. They tend to be really efficient, good in many situations, or just capable of ending a game by themselves.
B's.
B's are cards that actively pull you towards their colors. These are headliners for a set, go-to cards, and reasons to be in a particular color, clan, or guild.
C's.
C's are playable. Most cards fall into this category. They're fairly interchangeable, and you're going to end up with a bunch in your deck. C's don't mean bad. C's are just kind of your average card.
D's.
D's are sometimes playable, but you'd prefer not to run them. These are the cards that, when you've got these in your deck, you kind of wince a little. You're actively unhappy that you have to play them.
F's.
And then F's are basically unplayable.
Seth and Kenny will get points based on how far off they are from the professional grades. It's a lot like golf. There's a lot of cursing and the low score wins. To spice it up, the loser of our little game will have to buy a booster box of the new set for the winner. Stick around till the end of the show to see who won. But for now, let's talk about some of the truly awful decisions Kenny and Seth made, and maybe even some of the valuable lessons learned, as Filthy Casuals review Lord of the Rings, Mr. Frodo! Okay. Yeah, that should do nicely. Welcome to Filthy Casuals Review, Late Boys Edition. We are here looking at Lord of the Rings, the extended edition. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's very late in the game. Later than we've ever been. Various things have come together for that.
Life has happened, that's for sure.
But it gives us an interesting look at this set because this is the most thorough we can be from where we had the cards rated originally to where we now have them, having seen gameplay, done gameplay.
Yeah, exactly.
So we're going to be jumping into that as always, but we're going to start with the awards from the previous set, March of the Machine. And it was a fun little journey for me to go back and look at the notes that I took from last set and see where we landed. So the first one I have, I need to pull up my notes on my phone here, is Seth's defeat. It's Invasion of Vryn, which is a blue card, I believe. Let's find out.
Yes.
It is. You gave it a B-. It's funny, I'm listing this as your defeat, and yet it is also, I gave it the same exact grade of B-, and they gave it a C. I think it's because you went to bat for this one a little bit more.
Sure.
So this card, these are the invasion battles, so it's three and a blue for a battle siege. It has four defense counters. When it ETBs, you draw three cards, then discard a card. And if you can take it down, it transforms into Overloaded Mage Ring. It's an artifact with one tap sack, copy target spell you control. And basically, this was like a combo of things for both of us where we fell into a trap of a card that's strictly card advantage and also a card that just copies a thing. These are both things that LR doesn't always get on board with.
And that's fair.
And it turned out to be the case. This card was definitely not one of the best sieges. I will say this, because you and I actually played a decent amount of March of the Machine together. And what did you think of the battle sieges overall? I have my opinion, but I want to hear what you have to say about it.
You know, the battles there for me really didn't have all that much of an impact for me personally. There were definitely some matches where people would get a bunch of battles out there. That was their plan to attack and everything else like that. I really did not see much flipping per se. It was more the act of just casting that front side for me. But yeah, other than that, it really kind of seemed more like a red herring, and I really didn't have all that much effect with them.
I get you.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely, like, the front side wound up being a big part of it. It's like, what is the immediate impact when I cast this thing? The positive thing I have to say about it is, like, from a design perspective, where there were some that were good and there were some that were bad.
Sure.
I think it very easily could have been one or the other, where it's like, oh, this set is just all about the battles. You have to draft them.
Right.
You have to pick up every single one. That's all that matters in this set, which wasn't the case. Nor was it the case that, oh, you can just ignore these. They're a total flop. New card, but who cares? So I think they did kind of hit a sweet spot. And this is one of the ones that fell through the crack, which I don't take as a knock on the set overall, because I would prefer this version of the world where some of the battles are just not as good as the others.
Yeah, sure. Makes sense.
My second defeat, I guess, if you take ours as a tie, is also a blue card, Meeting of Minds. Let's see what we gave it here. So you were right on track with a C, as were the LR boys. I gave it a D or F. And this was another one of those cards where I was just thinking, well, you know, it's a divination. And, I mean, I know in the history of LR, divination is a highly valued card. And I, of course, love it too. But in the past few sets, just a plain old divination is not that interesting. This is 3 and a blue for an instant. Convoke, draw 2 cards. So, you know, if you have one creature to help cast this, it just is divination. But you can get this down to 2 mana or 1 mana or even free if the game goes late enough. Convoke wound up being very good in this set, and it's just very good overall.
Yeah.
One thing I've learned the past few sets is that if there's a divination that lets you get some kind of reasonable discount, it's worth looking at.
Sure.
They Makes tend sense. To value those pretty well. Whereas, like, a straight-up divination is almost always going to be, like, a C-.
Sure.
Next up, Seth's victory is Blighted Burgeoning.
Yay. I feel good about this one.
We'll take a look here. Again, this is one where you came to bat in the conversation. Mm-hmm. We had similar grades. They gave it D or F. We gave it Cs. But this is a classic Seth-style card,
I feel like. Yes.
It's like your mana rocks. 2 and a green for an aura, chance of land. When it ETBs, you incubate 2, so this is that artifact that you can pay to flip over into a creature that has those 2/1/1 counters on it. And then, whenever the enchanted land is tapped for mana, you add an additional mana. So it's ramp, it's a creature later on in the game. It does a lot of different things, and it wound up playing actually pretty darn well.
Yeah.
You know, you like the mana rocks.
I do.
With some
to a fault.
Especially the mana rock with upside.
Sure.
And this is a mana rock where the upside is a creature, like a body.
Yeah.
And also the incubate token by itself is fodder for sacrifice decks. It just wound up having...
good utility card, right? Yeah.
In addition to, you know, we tend to like the 3 mana ramp you spells.
Correct.
And this one did a lot more than that.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have to look this one up. I wrote this down straight away. My victory was Invasion of Amonkhet. Consult the grades here. Again, we are kind of on the same. We're on the same page with all of these.
Yeah.
I gave it a B plus. You gave it a B. They gave it a C. But again, this is I went to bat for this.
Sure.
We were concerned going into it. Well, I wasn't because I gave it a good grade, but. LR was talking about needing to affect the board, that being the most important thing. Invasion of Amonkhet doesn't really do that on the front side. 1 blue/black for a 4 defense counter siege. When it ETBs, each player mills 3, then each opponent discards a card and you draw a card. I mean, that's already decent value just on the front side.
Sure.
It doesn't affect the board, but you're getting pretty far ahead already. And if you can flip it, you get rewarded. It's a 4/4 creature that ETBs as a copy of any creature card in a graveyard, except it remains a 4/4 creature. So your card that already got you a nice little 2/1 turns into a 4/4 copy of something that could copy ETBs or just be a disgusting rare or, you know, whatever is good in the graveyard. So this had huge upside, and they wound up being very, very high
on
this card.
Yeah, it's a good card for sure, which is why we rated it so highly.
Yeah. And then the wild card, which actually has implications for today's conversation about Lord of the Rings. In general, is a cycle of cards, the land cyclers.
The basic
land cyclers. So I'm going to read just one of them, but there was one for each color. This one is Timberland Ancient. 4 green/green for a 6/5 creature tree folk. Reach, Trample, Forest Cycling 2. So you pay 2, discard it, you go look for a forest.
Sure.
And I was definitely the most outspoken, but you and I both were like, these are good.
Yeah.
And LR was like, holy moly, these are also really nice. It's like, you know, early on, you got to hit your land drop, you cycle it for the land, great. Or later on in the game, you pay more mana and you get something good.
Sure.
Like this card right here. These wound up being somewhere between fine to play and probably cut them. So they were like C minus D plus cards, whereas I know I was rating them B minuses kind of across the board. And they just wound up not being that good.
You know, make them a little bit better if you took one off that cycling cost.
Yes.
I bet that'd be pretty good, wouldn't it?
That would go a very long way.
Yeah, I think that would go a long way.
Spoilers.
Yeah.
And speaking of spoilers, let's get into Lord of the Rings spoilers.
Yeah, let's do it.
Let's spoil a set that came out, what, a month and a half ago? Who knows at this point? All right. So, I think the only logical place to begin is Ringsight in the gold cards.
Sounds great to me.
Which is one blue-black sorcery. The ring tempts you, which we can talk about what that means.
Yes.
Search your library for a card that shares a color with a legendary creature you control. Reveal it, put it in your hand, and shuffle. So, the ring tempts you. Basically, it is like, when you and I first saw it, it's like the dungeon
from exactly.
Adventures in the Forgotten Realms. It's this extra game piece. You're progressing forward on a track as the game goes on.
Sure.
Each time the ring tempts you, you move forward on this track. You can get from level 1 up to level 4. Once you get to level 4,
that's it.
That's the end of the track. And from that point on, the ring tempts you just as one thing, which is it makes one of your creatures your ring bearer.
Right.
And this happens every time the ring tempts you. It already, like, I'm describing what it does. And
it's a lot.
It's so cool. Okay, so the ring tempts you. That means you name one of your creatures on the battlefield, if you have one, becomes your ring bearer. Your ring bearer gets more and more powerful as the ring tempts you additional times. So the first time it tempts you, your ring bearer can't be blocked by creatures with greater power than your ring bearer.
Correct. And becomes legendary.
Yeah. Very importantly. And that's every time. Next up is the most important part, which is that you get to loot when the creature attacks. Level 3, when your opponent blocks your ring bearer, they sacrifice the creatures that blocked it at the end of combat. And level 4, the final level, is when it's unblocked at the end of combat, they lose 3 life, your opponent does. So, a lot of stuff going on here. Very clunky mechanic. I don't think either of you, either you or I, were really that big of a fan of the concept. We didn't really like dungeons in the first place.
Right, yeah.
And this is just kind of another iteration of that.
Yeah.
Having played it, I do like it a lot more than the dungeons. I think it plays better. I think it's more interesting. It has more flavor going for it, which...
Correct. It's the ring, right?
Yeah.
So as long as it tempts us, you get more powerful, right?
Right. And and the ring bearer sneaking through enemy lines and all of that. And
it fits.
And also that the ring bearer becomes a target. You know, it's like, I need to take out the ring bearer.
Exactly.
All that works for me. It's just very clunky. That's a lot of things to happen for a keyword that says, the ring tempts you.
Like, it's so simple, right? On the surface.
But once we get in, this card in particular, Ringsight, this is our first chance to talk about how we valued it. I personally did my thing of, like, I did not view this as being a ring tempt is not worth a full card by itself.
Sure, that's
so. If I just saw a card that said, you know, one blue mana, the ring tempts you, that would not be worth it to me.
That's fair.
So I basically, in my head, I was valuing it as like half a card, essentially.
Okay.
So coming back to the Ringsight, you get half a card, the ring tempts you.
Sure.
Then you search up another card, a legendary, that shares this color, or shares a color with your legendary, and of course, because the ring tempts you, you're getting a legendary creature if you didn't already have one. So this is giving you 1.5 cards for 3 mana.
Yeah, okay.
And,
all right.
And the ring temptation. I think it is okay. And this one, I really was just relying on Wizards to support this.
Of course.
This mechanic that they're introducing into the set, this front line headliner mechanic.
Exactly.
So I gave it a C. You gave it a B minus. They said D or F.
Okay. All right. Well, a little off there.
I think so. Yeah. I don't know where exactly I would put it now. I think it's certainly playable. I would not say D or F. I would say if you're in the colors of blue, black, and you see Ringsight, you're going to play it.
Right.
But it is tricky because the two color cards, you really need a reason to be there.
Mm-hmm.
You need to already be there.
Sure.
You were talking about one, the black-white one, where it's like, it's not that it's a bad card, but it's like, it's such a high color demand on you.
It really forces you, like, especially because it's two mana. We'll get into that card here in just a minute. But yeah, it's really tough that, you know, your mana's dictated for you with cards like this. And that makes it tough, especially at the lower end. Now, if this were a later game where you could establish, you know, your colors and get that in there, I give it more of a pass. But something that's that early on, it's very dictated, so it's a little bit harder to cast in the early games when it's very crucial to get your board state out there, right? So I usually have more trouble with these very mana-intensive, mana-color-intensive early game plays.
But, you know, we both wound up liking this.
We did.
Let's get into the card that we were just referencing.
All right,
here,
let's do it.
Shadow Summoning. I'll let you read that one.
Okay. So Shadow Summoning is white and black for a sorcery. It's uncommon. Create two tapped 1/1 white spirit creature tokens with flying. Nice and simple. For this one here, I rated this at a C+. Again, typically uncommons for me start at a B- and then I kind of adjust from there. So I went down just a little bit on this one. You actually gave this a B+, which actually matched the LR boys there at a B+. For me personally, I just don't really respect these as well. At least I'm consistent, right? Because we were actually talking about this earlier with Strixhaven. There was the lesson, if I remember right.
Where it's a lesson, like Inkling Summoning.
Something like that, yeah.
And it was a 3-mana, make 2/1/1 flyers.
Mm-hmm.
That was a lesson
that
you could learn.
Yeah, exactly. So with these here, two kind of dinky 1/1 flyers that require two specific colors, especially in the early game, doesn't really cut the mustard for me, essentially. So I rated this a little bit lower.
I get that.
Yeah.
I think I would put this at a B+ in terms of how it plays. Like when
okay,
you cast it,
fair.
I think it is a B+.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of where I would pick it in the draft, it would come down quite a bit from
okay.
that. Like I have never picked one of these up as my first pick.
That's fair.
Especially because I've liked drafting black so much,
mm-hmm.
and black is so deep with cards.
Okay.
I would take any good black common over this probably because it keeps my options open.
Sure.
If I'm already in black white, then yeah, this card is just instantly
Absolutely.
Amazing, and
sure.
I'm going to pick it up. Right. Next up. Oh, I know I'm wrong about this one. Gandalf Sanction. I mean, you know, front runner for most incorrect on my part.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah, this is the one of the blue red uncommons. One blue red sorcery. It deals X damage to target creature, where X is the number of instant and sorcery cards in your graveyard. Excess damage is dealt to that creature's controller instead.
Mm.
So, I gave this a C+. Yes, I did. And you gave it a B, they gave it a build around B.
Sure.
My logic here is that this is a conditional build around removal spell.
Fair enough.
Which moves it, and it's multicolor, as we've
sure,
just talked.
Sure.
So it's like, okay, I have to be in blue red.
Mm-hmm.
I have to do lots of instants and sorceries, which, granted, that those are the colors of instants and sorceries,
sure.
but it's not guaranteed to get the job done when I want it to.
Okay.
The reality is, one, you're in blue red, you're going to have lots
mm-hmm.
of instants
yep.
and sorceries, and you're also going to be tempting a lot generally, which
right.
means you are looting things away
mm-hmm.
into your graveyard. Sometimes you are basic land cycling things
sure.
away.
Sure.
And it's just very routine for this, for Gandalf
mm-hmm.
Sanction to be 4, 5, 6, whatever. And this can take out things early, it can take out things late. It also serves as a win condition
mm-hmm.
in some cases where it's like, well, I've got them down to 4, and they have a 1/1 in play, and I top deck Gandalf Sanction,
mm-hmm.
and it's like, boom, do 7 damage,
yeah.
6 of it goes to your
sure,
face.
Sure.
So yeah, this winds up being much, much better than I gave it credit for. A B is definitely a fine grade to give this thing. I don't even think it needs to build around that much. I mean, try building a blue-red deck where you're not doing these things.
Well, you know, one thing that I say this as someone who has not played yet, this school and life has just happened right now at this point, so I've not had a chance to actually play this, but a little backstory about me, I much prefer like the Jund grindy style decks. I was so excited to want to try this blue-red tempting deck, which, like, get as close to oops all spells as possible. I would never play a deck like that if kind of given my own, like, in constructed and stuff like that. I'd never play a deck like that. But I think that's kind of a testament to how good the design is, essentially, with this set. So I'm very excited about that. And, you know, we've talked about this, and you said you've had success with kind of grinding out opponents and everything else. So not only is that viable, I'm also excited for a deck that I would never really play. So I think that's really cool, and that's what I'm excited about with this set
here. I think one thing that you'll enjoy about the Ring Tempting is that just that they've stapled it onto a bunch of cards that you'd play anyway.
Sure.
And that's what makes it good. Like, you just play a creature that you would put in your deck anyway, and then it gives you this little extra value.
Yeah.
Which is why it was making me think of Classic Jund. It's like, oh, I'm going to play this 3/3 that dies into 3/1/1s. I'll play this spell that nets me 2 cards and does a little damage to your face.
Sure.
It's just like high effectiveness cards.
Makes sense.
All right, on we go to white, unless you've got anything else here.
That's good for me. Let's move on to white.
Let's do it. Dunedain Blade. And we're all kind of in the same ballpark here. You gave it a C-, so did LR. I gave it a C+, so I'm a little bit higher on this guy. And this is an equipment, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I don't know. Now, having played the set, I don't know where I come down on this.
Okay.
One in a white, artifact equipment. Equip creature gets +2/+1. To equip a human, it costs 1. But in general, it's equip 3.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So, I think it's fair to say that outside of a human's deck, this sucks.
Sure.
You're not going to play this. If you are in white, you're going to have humans. It's just a matter of how concentrated humans you are.
That makes sense.
So I do think this is a humans based card. Very clearly telegraphing it. That's what it's about. In general, for me, an equipment that said 1 in a white, equip creature gets +2/+1, equip 1. I'm on board.
I like that.
I think that actually is good enough to make it. So it more becomes a matter of how often is that the case.
That's fair.
Do you really want to equip? Like, if all you're doing is making 1/1 tokens, is that good enough? That kind of thing.
Sure.
So I do think that it is good enough to play. But then again, so do you and LR. I've seen this card do some good things.
Yeah.
But ultimately, it's not high on my list of pickable cards.
Sure. And even you said build around for this one. We did not. I think, you know, it does change in that, but we all gave it in the C range. It's not like we're going to change our strategy or anything like that.
No.
But if you're already there, oh man, that's a great supporting item for something you've already happened to build, right?
It is. Which I think your grade is probably better in that regard because, again, the priority of pick is not that important.
Sure.
It's like, if you are the person drafting white humans, you can get a Dunedain Blade.
Sure.
And you're going to...
If it wheels, you're happy.
It'll be fine.
Yeah.
It'll be fine. Yeah. The next one I have marked here is Reprieve.
Yeah, that's a fun one.
I like that one.
Yeah.
This is the White Remand. One in a white for an instant. Return target spell to its owner's hand. Draw a card. An uncommon.
Sounds pretty familiar.
It just is the White Remand, basically. And, you know, Remand is an amazing card.
Mm-hmm.
Still good in Cube.
Very relevant, yeah.
Does a great job in its role. I know for a fact that Luis Scott Vargas loves this card.
this is a slam dunk.
Marshall loves this too. B+.
Sure.
They give it a B-.
Okay.
And you gave it a C+. You were actually closer overall. Yeah, I mean, that's basically, I've given my full thought on it. It's like, it's just a great card.
For sure.
And I've seen people already playing this in older formats, playing it in Legacy. And
it totally makes sense, right?
Yeah, I mean,
absolutely.
If you think Remand is good, then Reprieve is good.
You're going to like it.
I'll be honest, though, I have not... I don't think anyone has cast this on me.
Oh, really? Okay.
In playing the set, and I've played it a decent amount so far. Okay. So that's a good indication that it's not as good as I thought. I don't know.
Okay. It's always interesting because, you know, I mean, Magic Arena has their randomizer, and I would venture to guess that there's some sort of algorithm. It's like, I almost wonder if they kind of go in waves with some of their cards. Like, you see some rares more during certain periods of it. So, like, I've noticed this whenever I'm playing versus when I'm watching Nummy play. We tend to get a lot of the same rares at about the same time, which is always, I always find that interesting. And I realize that that's me probably just trying to make some sense of something that maybe totally is random. I don't know. But I just have a feeling and an inkling here that we might see waves of it where you see it a lot more and then sometimes it just falls off.
I mean, it's something I don't like in general about the digital platform where RNG is concerned, because it's like, when you, in paper, it's not like you don't have to think about it at all.
Sure.
But it's like, you know, like the hand smoother thing.
Yeah. Like, it's always on the back of your mind.
Yeah.
Right?
It's like, well, I know that this is something they're doing, so when I get screwed on mana, I'm mad about it.
What really happened?
Right.
Here? Yeah.
And so when you open, you know, your fourth opening pack in a row and it's the same rares,
yeah.
You're like, come on.
Yeah.
This is all digital. Mm-hmm. I know this is all baloney.
Yeah.
Like, give me a card.
Definitely feels bad.
You would still complain, but it wouldn't feel the same way as if you were opening physical cards.
And you know what's funny? Even though they're physical, I mean, they could be on the same print run.
Yeah,
right?
Totally.
And they couldn't have...
Yeah, the same logic could apply there.
But for some reason, because it's digital and all that, and we're like, ah, dang, come on, it's Arena again. But
Coming back to the card, I haven't seen it played, which is surprising. It's not
that
like
is.
White is an okay color. Mm-hmm. Like, I've been beaten by white decks, and I would assume any white deck would take Reprieve.
Sure.
There's no reason not
absolutely.
To have it. Like, you just put your opponent off tempo.
Exactly.
But I don't see it.
Okay.
It's uncommon. I understand that takes it out a little bit. But, you know, there are lots of uncommons that I do see all the time.
Sure. Sure.
All right. You've got one lined up here next.
Yeah. So this one here is Fog on the Barrow Downs. Now, this is 2W. It is an enchantment aura. It's common. Chanted creature is a spirit and can't attack or block. So, a pacifism of sorts, right?
Yep.
This one here I rated as a C+. You had it as a C-, and the LR boys had this as a D or an F. So, unplayable. Typically with these here, and you know, maybe you see this a little differently, but like a pacifism of sorts, I always thought was halfway decent. Like, it is pseudo-removal, right? I mean, it's not the full, like, black destroy creature or anything like that. But it neutralizes a threat, right? They're still on the board, so if you can still activate some stuff, it doesn't stop that. But there's like some green cards that are like six, like the tree folks and all that. Those are big creatures and like the amass creatures and all that. So if you have like a big orc army that's staring you in the face, I like these kinds of cards for that reason.
Or they have a fully leveled up ring bearer.
There you go. Yeah, perfect. Yeah, yeah. I didn't think that the spirit part really made much of a difference in the set or anything. I think it's truly more flavor than anything. So I'm rating this on the can't attack, can't block.
Same.
So pacifism is one less. It's one in a white versus this is 2W. I wonder if maybe that made the difference or what.
This is like a recent trend for LR, and also. The Lords of Limited are on the same boat, which is just that aura-based removal is just not as good as it used to be.
That's fair.
Because pacifism was like a core set staple for a long time.
Truly.
And is one of the best removal spells in the core sets that it appeared in. Because it's like 1W, can't attack or block.
Right.
Basically is like a Doomblade.
Yeah, it neutralized that creature.
It's worse in this set and recent sets because there are just too many ways to take advantage of a resource you have on board.
Sure.
If it's just a creature you can do something with. the best example I can give of that in this set is a common black card called Nasty End.
Ah, yes.
The one that lets you sacrifice a creature, and then you draw two cards. And if it was a legendary creature you sacrificed, you draw three cards instead.
Sure.
So if your opponent hits you with their uncommon removal spell on your legendary creature, and you sacrifice it to draw three cards, it's like the biggest disaster for them possible.
Sure. That's fair.
That's one example of something that could happen, but there are just lots of ways to get around this style of card.
Well, and you know, thinking about this as well, we've talked about this before. Maybe it'll stick eventually for me, but typically whenever a lot of these creatures anymore have ETB effects, and the damage is already relatively done, right? So that kind of neutralizes pacifism style cards.
It does, yeah.
Yeah.
And like cards that you play that are cheap and have some quick effect. Again, black is a good example for this, but there are cards that just quickly come into play, do their thing, and it's like, well, the damage is done.
Sure.
Or, you know, you're playing against red-white and they play a range of small creatures and you're looking at your three mana stop one thing and you're like, well...
Yeah, it feels bad.
This doesn't really do that much.
That makes sense.
I think this is a card... I don't know where I would put it overall.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think you really cut this from white.
Sure.
Lords of Limited is kind of on the boat of, like, just don't play this card.
Okay.
It is actively a hindrance to your win rate to put this in your deck.
Okay.
I'm not there just because I've lost to this card too many times. Like, they put it on... Like, I play my 4-4, they just fog on the barrow downs it, and it's well... I really can't do anything now.
Sure.
So I'm not sure where I land on it. But the thing is, you don't, when you lose to a card like this, you're not seeing the rest of their draft.
Sure.
You're not seeing them go against, you know, multiple people where it's like, well, if this card were anything else, I might have a better chance here.
Fair. That's fair. So I think you're C minus. I think that's still probably a fair assessment on that one.
That could be where it really is.
And our play styles, you know, like we're not at the LR Boys level or anything like that. So maybe
MMR,
there we go. And maybe that is more the case.
Next up, one we both had some notes on is Tale of Tenuvial. It's a saga, I think.
Yes.
It is. 3WW for an enchantment saga. Chapter 1, target creature you control gains indestructible for as long as you control this saga. Chapter 2, return a target creature card from your graveyard to the battlefield. And Chapter 3, up to 2 target creatures you control each gain lifelink until end of turn.
Okay.
And, you gave it a B-, I gave it a B, they gave it a D or F.
Yeah.
So really? Not
really surprised.
Not playable. And their logic when they were talking about it was that from behind, this is pretty bad. Like, if you're in a situation where their board state is more developed and you cast this, target creature you control gains indestructible.
Mm-hmm.
You haven't really impacted the board. You haven't really done anything to change the amount of attackers and blockers. Chapter 2, something happens.
Sure.
And they're just like, it's a little bit too slow, which I can definitely see. For 5 mana, you'd like to get something more out of your turn 5 play than a creature you control is indestructible.
Mm-hmm.
But assuming you can get to chapter 2, I think this thing turns on.
Yeah.
And obviously chapter 1 helps you get to chapter 2.
Yeah.
Because you have an indestructible blocker. I think there are situations where you will be too far behind for this to do anything.
That's fair.
That chapter 1's not going to do
it. Yeah, that's fair.
I'm not going to assign a card to the Death Realm because there are situations where it's not as good.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, a card doesn't have to always get me from behind to be a playable card or to be a good card.
Right.
And this one feels like if the board is stalled, this card is good.
I agree. I think of this as a great card in a ring tempting deck. Because especially if you get to the second level and you're looting, toss one of your big creatures. You're going to get it back here. So to me, that's where I was like, the upside of this one really outweighs the downside of if you're so far behind. So it's really hard for a lot of cards to help you come back. So I don't know. For me personally, I think that's kind of an unfair assessment for this to get a D or an F. But you know, what do I know?
It is another one where it's like Reprieve, mm-hmm. just based on how often I see it.
Sure.
I don't see it played too often. I've seen it played against me and it has done things. But Nomi actually just had a quote in a video you and I were watching where he said, just because you lose to a card doesn't make the card good.
This is true.
And this might be one of those where it's yeah, I can point to a game state where this will get you out of it. Does that make it better on average than another five drop that you could get for the same pick? Mm-hmm. Not necessarily.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, I think a big topic for us in this set is blue. And I think we should just open up with counter spells in the set.
Yes.
So, there's three.
I think so, yeah.
That are worth talking about.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So, number one. I'll let you read that one.
Okay. So, first one here that we'll discuss is Stern Scolding. It's blue, instant, uncommon, counter target creature spell with power or toughness 2 or less. Okay, fair enough. What do we have for grades here on this one?
Oh, sorry. No
problem. Okay, so I rated this one a B-. You rated this a C-, so we have a little bit of difference on this one.
Pretty big difference.
Yeah, exactly. LR Boys actually rated this a B, so they're even higher on this one here. And my thought process with this one here, I looked to see how many creatures had power toughness 2 or less. And there's quite a few of them. I don't have the number in front of me or anything, but it was a large sum.
I believe that.
At one mana, literally my note says they can't rate this one bad, right?
One mana. Surely.
Surely. This has to be functional, a functional counter. Thankfully got on the right side with this one here, because I know that, and I kind of wonder if this trend's changing just a little bit. Maybe the tides are changing here. But they really didn't like counters. That was truly one of those things where it was almost a guaranteed DRF. Let's just move on and go with it. And we're starting to have a lot more discussion around counters now at this point.
Yeah, one of the most consistent things that we've talked about in doing this is that they hate counter spells. Yep. They consistently dislike them. And we consistently overvalue them, according to LR. This one popped up and I was ready to also be on board for not liking it.
Sure.
This also reminded me of an old card from original Ravnica somewhere. It was one blue mana for counter target creature spell that costs 2.
Yeah, was that like Mental Misstep or something along those lines?
That was one of the Phyrexian ones that countered.
Yeah, that's right.
Something that costs 1 or less.
1 or something, yeah.
But this one was a creature that cost exactly 2.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a good constructed card for a long time, and they always were like, I know this is good and constructed, but you don't want this unlimited.
It's very narrow.
And this felt like that too. I mean, it does fall off. I've played with this card. It is good.
Sure.
It's better than I rated it. But it does fall off eventually.
Sure.
Like,
of course.
Sure, like in the late game when the board stalled, they could still cast something that you will want to counter.
Of course.
And it does help that it can pick up some uncommons that have 2 power or 2 toughness. Like the uncommon Gandalf is a 2/4.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
For 4 mana. So your one blue spell counters their 4 drop. That's pretty nice. But this one does fall off more than the others.
Sure.
But we also have Glorious Gale, another counter spell. One in a blue for an instant. Counter target creature spell.
Okay.
Period. So it's Essence Scatter. But then, if it was a legendary spell, the ring tempts you.
Okay.
So it's an Essence Scatter with some potential upside.
Sure.
So far, I think in all the games I've played, I have not seen this tempt.
Okay. So it's just being used just straight.
It's just an Essence Scatter.
Yeah.
It's like, I guess I would say, the situation where you counter a legend, that will happen.
Of course.
Like, it's just a coincidence. It really hasn't happened for me. But that is like marginal upside rather than a big component of what the card is.
Sure.
This one, I gave it a B-, they gave it a C+, and you gave it a D or F. You mentioned that you wanted to talk about this one as well.
Yeah, so this one here, like, this is where this discussion kind of prompted, because I just wish there was some consistency here with counters and how this works. So this goes back to, I didn't think this was enough, because I'm getting all the counters confused anymore, but there's essentially one where it was practically Mana Leak here in one of these past sets. It's fairly recent. I think it was in Mom or something. But if you had enough artifacts or something along those lines, it ended up being essentially Mana Leak.
Mm-hmm.
That got rated poorly. Mm-hmm. So I was like, all right, fine. So if it's like two mana or more and it's a counter, DRNF, I'm not going to worry about it and just call it a day. So,
we've said that many times.
We have, yeah. So I'm just like, okay, I'm not going to waste too much brain power on it. I'm just going to say DRNF and just go. This one ended up biting me. So that, I don't know. I feel like the winds are changing just a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, I think the biggest surprise of all on the counter train is Saruman's Trickery.
Oh, I know. We're getting more expensive with
it. Yeah, I mean, this one is just cancel. One blue-blue counter a spell. But tagged onto it is Amass Orcs 1.
Sure.
So Amass is a returning mechanic, but for a different creature type.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, if you don't have an army of orcs, you make one with that many 1-1 counters on it. So if you didn't have one before, Amass Orcs 1 means make a 1-1 orc.
Sure.
If you already had one, it means put another 1-1 counter on that. So it either makes an army or starts growing an army.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So at its base, this is 3 mana, counter a spell, make a 1-1 or put a 1-1 counter on another creature you already have on the battlefield. We know they hate cancel. That is not up for debate.
Right.
They have booed and hissed every cancel that has come around. I was not of the opinion that even if it was just and then put a 1-1 creature into play, forget Amass.
Sure.
I did not think that would be enough to move the needle.
No.
A 1-1 token is like half a card.
Mm-hmm.
So I just did not think that would move it enough. And that moved it for them all the way into B minus.
Jeez.
From D or F all the way to B minus. Which is pretty wild.
That is, yeah.
I think it does play that way. If I'm just looking at how the card is.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I already was on the boat of, I think cancel is a fine magic card to play.
Sure.
The advantage that this has over something like the 1-mana Stern Scolding is that this won't fall off.
Of course, this
will get something eventually as the game goes on. And adding a little bit of extra value, of course, is not going to hurt the grade. But yeah, this was a crazy one. The thing is, like, they are correct on all these. Maybe not the exact grade.
Sure.
But the direction of these are all good playable cards in this color. So.
All right.
I would not take this as like a hard and fast lesson going forward.
That's
because
fair.
I think it's very context dependent.
Yeah, that's fair. All right. Sounds good.
Let's see. I think maybe the only other one worth talking about in blue is Lorien Revealed.
Okay.
Which is the Land Cycler.
Aha.
Yeah, so we mentioned this in regards to March of the Machine.
Sure.
But there's another cycle of basic Land Cyclers, one for each color. The blue one is Lorien Revealed, 3 blue-blue sorcery, draw 3 cards, that has Island Cycling 1.
Sure.
Not 2, but 1.
Yeah.
And like you said, the difference between 1 and 2 mana is a
huge
amount.
Yeah.
Makes all the difference in the world. And I think as well, in this set, something that is really useful, not on this card in particular, but the ability to recur things that you've gotten rid of is really useful. This card, Lorien Revealed, is especially good because there's not a ton of ways to get card advantage in the set, like raw card advantage.
Yeah, sure.
So this winds up being actually quite good.
Sure.
The lands are not very good, like non-basic lands that you can pick up. So these Land Cyclers wind up being actually more important to making a stable mana base.
Oh, okay. Very good.
In other sets. Right, on to black.
All right, let's do it. All right, so in black, I'm going to lead us off on this one here with Gorbag.
Gorbag.
Gorbag of Minas Morgul. It's 1 in black, uncommon, 2/2, legendary creature, orc soldier. Whenever a goblin or orc you control deals combat damage to a player, you may sacrifice it. When you do, choose one. Either draw a card or create a treasure token. So this one here, it's a grizzly bear with a whole lot of upside, for me at least. Orcs, goblins, very, very popular in the set here for good reason. We just mentioned Amass, which is an army of orcs. So... naturally, like an Amass deck will do very well in here. Mm-hmm. Ring Tempting's also very good here to make one of your orcs or goblins unblockable, essentially. We'll say pseudo-unblockable.
Sure.
Really fueling this one here. So, a lot of good stuff going with this one here. So I ended up ranking this one as a B minus. You were a little lower on this one here at a C plus, and then the LR boys actually rated this as unplayable, D or an F. So,
well, they're a little split because they said D, C minus.
Okay. So it's on the verge of playable. Okay, that's fair. I don't know. I'm pretty high on this one, actually. I thought this was actually a pretty good one, especially if you're going to be... Actually, I don't know if I put build around on this one. I should have. Well, I didn't. I should have.
I can see why you wouldn't, though. It's not like you're going to be playing black and not picking up orcs and goblins.
Right, exactly. You're kind of naturally fitting into that. But kind of leads me to the question here. If they rated this one very low, I almost feel like this is almost a payoff for like a mass and like for stuff like that. So it's like... Do you like a mass? Do you not like a mass? So I just got very confused whenever I see a cancel with an amass one get rated so highly. And again, context is important, right? Versus Gorbag here, unplayable. So I'm like, do you like a mass? Do you not like a mass? I don't know. That had me a little confused on this one.
I mean, this is one where, looking at it with the context now, because one thing I did when I first graded these cards is I was pretty bad at thinking, having in my head, oh, what if you made this your ring bearer?
Mm-hmm.
This could make this better.
Mm-hmm.
So this is one where obviously an advantage you could have is I amass one, so I make a 1-1 orc army, and then I make it my ring bearer, so it's hard to block this thing. And now... I send in my 1-1 orc.
Mm-hmm.
It does damage. I sacrifice my crummy little 1-1 token to draw a card.
Yeah.
Okay, and now I play another card with a mass. Okay, now I can like rinse and repeat.
Yeah.
That all makes sense to me now.
Sure.
Thinking about it,
I
this guy just doesn't do anything.
That's fair.
I don't know why. I could not tell you. He just doesn't get picked up. And look, I have not played. I think I've played one non-black deck.
Okay.
In my time playing Lord of the Rings, and I've never played this guy.
Oh, really? Okay.
I haven't picked him up. He is uncommon, so he's not
sure.
He's not the easiest to get. But you know, just looking around him in all directions, I've played all these other uncommons.
Yeah, sure.
So, I don't know.
The two spots, a very important spot, right? And sometimes you just have better cards to play at the two drop.
I think that is it.
Yeah.
He's like a grizzly bear with upside.
Mm-hmm.
And all around him in black. Like, I think this card suffers because black is just so good.
Sure.
Like, there are so many cards that I would happily take over him that he just winds up not making it over there. I mean, I think in theory I like your grade, but that's just how it goes.
Yeah.
A card that I hated that I have played a lot of actually is Nasty End, which I mentioned previously.
Mm-hmm.
This is the one in a black as an additional cost. Sacrifice a creature. It's an instant, importantly.
Mm-hmm.
You draw two cards. If it was a legend you sacrificed, you draw three cards instead.
Okay.
I feel like we've seen this kind of card
a million
times. Sacrifice a creature, draw some cards. And usually it's like, whatever.
Sure.
It really is not an important piece. And I was looking at this and I was like, boy, this is asking a lot of work from you to go up by one card. If it's not a legend that you're sacrificing.
Yeah, sure.
And it's true. If you are sacrificing a real creature, you're paying two mana, spending a card, sacrificing a creature to draw two cards.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just not all that good. And if it's a legend, you get one extra card.
Mm-hmm.
It's just not that good. But the thing is, there's just lots and lots of applications of this thing.
Mm-hmm.
First of all, when the ring tempts you, you typically will put it on your smallest creature.
Of course, yeah.
And when they've outlived their usefulness, or they become the target of a removal spell, or they get an aura put on top of them, you just sacrifice them and cash them in.
Sure.
And that works great.
And you sacrifice them for the three cards because they'd be legendary at that point. So that helps, right? Yep. Every little bit helps.
And there are lots of cards that tempt you when they come into play or leave play.
Yep.
So it's like, I've done the play a lot of times where you play a thing that tempts some dork that you have You attack with it. It gets by them because it has the ring bearer on it. You get to loot. And then before end of turn, you sacrifice your legend. Boop, cash in. You get three more cards.
Okay.
It just has like a lot of... They're not really combos. It just works with a lot of the cards in the set.
Sure.
So this is actually, I think, a very desirable card.
Very good.
All right. Next up. I was the only one who had anything to say in black.
Yeah. No, not much on my end. The only thing just that I'll say just overall with black was I wasn't quite sure what it was doing. It just kind of seems to be doing just a little bit of everything, which in this case actually ends up being pretty good because black's just kind of in there. Like you can fit it into about any deck that you play.
Which is what I've been doing.
Yeah,
I think black's advantage is just that it's super, super deep.
Mm-hmm.
I've started playing like a week and a half into the format when people are already, you know, landing on their ideas. I listened to some shows and it's like, oh, black is so good. Black is so good. So I expected not to be able to get any. And I just, I can't tell if it's that people are continuing to undervalue it, at least at my ranks where I'm playing, or if it's just so deep that it doesn't matter. And according to LSV, it's probably that second one. He's like, if you and two other black drafters could be at the table and all walk away with good decks, is what he said. So that could be what's going on. That brings us to one of the other best black commons in the set is Dunlinker Bane, which I gave a C+ to. You gave a C. They give a B to.
Okay.
It is a B, for sure.
Okay.
Two and a black for a 1/1 creature bird horror with flying. When it ETBs, you amass orcs too.
Okay.
So it's 3-mana 1/1 that makes it 2/2 when it comes to play. Okay. Or soups up your existing orc army. I mean, to me, just looking at it, I know we just came off of Preening Champion. And this is pretty similar to that. You know, you were talking about your blind spot of making a couple dorky 1/1 flyers.
Yeah.
This is my version of that, I think, where I look at this and I'm like, is this that good? A 3-mana 1/1 flyer plus a 2/2? Is that, how much better is that than a 3-mana 3/3?
Sure.
The answer seems to be much, much better.
Yeah.
For one thing, a 1/1 flyer is a great ring bearer.
Sure,
something
of course.
I just consistently overlooked that. The 1/1 or the 2/2 can be good sacrifice fodder. A mass 2 means that you can just be taking your existing 2/2 and turning it into an actual body that can do things as the game progresses. There's just a lot of good things that this card can do. This is something I have to remember next time. It's like the dork that makes another stupid little dork could be worth playing.
Because you're not putting all your eggs in one basket, right? Like talking about the 3-mana 3/3 versus something like this that spreads the wealth, essentially, right? So
I think these have gone up too because we've talked about the importance of getting plays on the board early and defending yourself.
Yes.
Making a 1/1 flyer and a 2/2 in one go early in the game like makes it so that a lot of aggressive decks are like where they might have run over you, now it's like it's a big roadblock in their way. One combo I've really liked with this too, there's a blue card that we skipped over because we basically agreed on it. It's an eagle. It's like a 4-mana 3/3 flyer. When it connects with your opponent, you can blink something on your side. Blinking this guy, obviously, is very good.
Of course,
you just keep making those amass tokens. Right. Next up is red.
All right.
I'm going to skip down to where we both have some things to say. Maybe this Goblin Fire Leaper is a good place. Because we both gave it a C. They gave it a B-.
Yeah.
There's the guy. You read that one?
Yeah, sure. So, Goblin Fire Leaper is one in a red. It's an uncommon 1/1 Goblin Warrior creature. You pay one in a red. This gets +1/+0 until end of turn. And when Goblin Fire Leaper dies, it deals damage equal to its power to target creature and opponent controls. So, this one here, again, I always start with an uncommon. I always start with B-, and I adjust from there. I went way down on this one here because I did not like the cost associated with this. So 2-mana for a 1/1, that's fine. If it had fire breathing, which was like the
one red,
just a single red mana for +1/+0, probably like this a lot better.
For sure.
I thought this was expensive for what you get here, especially early on. I would rather be spending my mana to, again, increase my board presence, right? So I did not rank this one very highly. I actually rated this one as a C versus the LR boys who also rated it as a B minus. You and I actually were the same here. We both rated this as a C. So we're much lower on this one than the LR boys with this one. So what are your thoughts on this one?
I agree with everything you're saying. Mm-hmm. I think that's exactly where I was at with this. Again, I was not thinking about tempting this guy, though.
Sure.
Because he's a 1-1. So yeah, once you get that level 1 tempting, mm-hmm. it means he can't be blocked
basically
by anything. And then, you can't block him later in the game, especially when you get to that level 4.
Yeah.
It's like, you can't block him. I can dump as much mana as I want to hit you with.
That's fair.
For this guy hits you now for 4, and then he's a level 4 ring bearer, so he also pings in an extra 3 on top of that.
That's fair. It does definitely grow.
It does.
Time. Okay.
And you can't ignore him forever is the big thing.
Sure.
And he will get a card eventually, I think is the big thing. And, for a 2-mana play, that's pretty good.
That's fair. I didn't think about it that way.
I didn't either. That totally slipped my mind. This is a card that you and I talked about a little bit previously that I think is worth discussing. Oh, right, because you were comparing this to the white-black Shadow Summoning. This is Rally at the Hornburg.
Yeah.
I'll go ahead and read this one.
Okay.
1 in a red, sorcery. Very simple card. I love it.
Mm-hmm.
Create 2/1/1 white human soldier creature tokens. Humans you control gain haste until end of turn.
Love it.
I mean, for a card design, hell yeah.
Yeah, of course.
You gave it a C minus, excuse me. They gave it a build around C plus, and I gave it a B.
Oh, okay.
So I was very high on this.
I'm
happy with this grade.
It's a good card. I am too low on it.
Having seen where it actually plays, I don't think it's quite a B, but a B minus, I think it could be.
Okay.
I think you want this in any red deck. It's a fine first pickable card, assuming you don't have a ton of amazing options. I wouldn't be furious about taking this first.
Okay.
Definitely one of the scariest things to see from your opponent is Rohirrim Lancer followed by Rally at the Hornburg.
Mm-hmm.
That's just a lot of action coming at you really quickly. Giving these things haste is awesome.
Yeah, of course.
Absolutely. 2 mana to make 2/1/1s is already a pretty good card.
Sure.
Giving them haste and getting a couple extra hits in with them.
Mm-hmm.
Can go a long way. This card, I think, also gets really good because there are some legends that have sick combos with it where it's Théoden King gives your guys double strike whenever a human comes into play. Gives a target double strike when a human comes into play.
Okay.
So top decking this after Théoden is really good.
Yeah.
There's one that gives all your creatures +1/+0 whenever a human comes into play. So this double triggering your human ETB effects and potentially benefiting from them is really, really good.
Mm-hmm.
I like this one a lot.
Yeah. Oh, I have nothing against a 2-mana make a couple dorks. That's fine. This one just really checks a lot more boxes because it's not as mana intensive. And then the hasty upside with it, while, it may not matter, that's there as well. So I like this one way, way better.
I like it too.
Yeah.
And just the ease of cast.
Sure. It's
very
course.
Nice.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, so this is a good one for us to disagree about.
All right.
Fiery Inscription.
Yeah.
So this is a build around.
Uh-huh.
Did you say build around?
I
said build around.
I should have. Yeah.
It definitely is a build around.
Yes.
So it's 2 in a red for an enchantment. When Fiery Inscription enters the battlefield, the ring tempts you. Good start.
Yep. Great start.
When you cast an instant or sorcery spell, it deals 2 damage to each opponent.
All right.
So, you gave it a B plus, so you're high on it.
Yes.
I gave it a C, not as high. And then right between us, build around B, I say right between us, much closer to you actually, are LR. So you like this card.
Yes, very much so.
Talk to me about what you see in this card.
So this one is one of the Trinity for me, or Trifecta, whichever one. So this is kind of the payoff for me. So give me all the birthday escapes, give me all the Rangers firebrands, give me all the firing inscriptions here with this one, and get a couple ring bearers in there because this is very tempt heavy at that point. That deck's gonna do great. I think, yeah, it's probably a niche for sure, but having 1-2 of these into play and you get a couple of these you know, like birthday parties, it pretty well just cycles through your deck at that point. Boom, 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 boom. You're having all kinds of damage with that. The red-blue uncommon spell that we had talked about there.
Gandalf Sanction.
Yeah, Gandalf Sanction. That's another really great item that you can throw here in this one. I wouldn't call it part of the trifecta, but really, really good. Yeah, yeah. So this card here actually got me really excited for that red-blue Oops All Spells Tent deck. So I really, really like this one. I realize I probably rated them a lot higher than I probably should have. And I did in this case, but just barely. Just barely. I really like it. I think
according
it just
to
LR,
you didn't rate it
yeah,
too far.
Yeah, wasn't too terribly high on it. So yeah, we'll see how that one plays out. That is one that if I get the opportunity, I'm definitely drafting that deck. I'll probably go 0-3, but that's fine. I will enjoy each time I get my ass whooped.
I tend to be skeptical of this style of card where the payoff is pinging your opponent.
Mm-hmm, sure.
Because it's just so all in. It's like sure. You either get there with the damage or you don't. Whereas mm-hmm. when you're playing creatures and you're building out your board,
yeah.
you know, if the payoff is instead you're making tokens, let's say.
Sure.
That represents damage, but it also represents a lot of other things that you could be doing sure. with your resources. And this one, you know, if I just look at what happens when I play it, I play 3 mana and I get a ring tint.
Mm-hmm, sure.
And I'm never getting that full card back.
Sure.
That's not true. If I get enough loots in, I'm getting my card mm-hmm, back. Mm-hmm. So that's unfair. I think this is definitely... I think you're right in that there are probably the most degenerate decks in the format sure. will feature Fire Inscription.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
It kind of has the thing going that Ikoria Cycling decks had, where it's a self-fueling thing.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
this rewards you for ring tempting,
mm-hmm.
and ring tempting draws you extra cards, and then you use these extra cards to do extra damage to your opponent, which mm-hmm. then finds you more cards that you can feed to this
sure.
thing. So it has that kind of self...
The engine.
Self-powering
yeah.
engine.
Mm-hmm.
So I can see it. I'm just not on board for paying 3 mana, and then
this
is what happens at first.
Sure.
You know, you cast that, and then your opponent is, you know, casting their Dunlin Crabane.
Mm, sure.
And it's like, I feel pretty far behind at that
sure.
point.
That's fair.
Okay. I think I'm going to skip the rest of red, unless
all
you've
right.
got something
no,
here.
No, that's
hard to set on. Because I see you have here, you and I talked about this previously.
Yeah. Yeah.
In a previous week, long list of the Ents.
Yeah, this is a mess on mine. Again, starting off with a B- for any kind of uncommon. So let me read it here real quick. Long list of the Ents, single green pip. It is a saga. It's uncommon. Chapters 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and 6 are all the same here. Note a creature type that has not been noted for long list of the Ents. When you cast your next creature spell of that type this turn, that creature enters the battlefield with an additional +1/+1 counter on it. So, you know, if you cast this on turn one and then you start getting all your creatures out, yeah, they get a little bit bigger and, you know, you kind of grind out that value then at that point. That's ideal, right? What if you got this on turn 7?
That's the problem.
Yeah, it sucks.
That's
yeah.
the problem.
Yeah.
Yeah, because, like, I definitely, when I first saw this, I was like, wow,
mm-hmm.
I'm just going straight to Magical Christmas Land.
Yeah,
like,
right?
And, like, because even, you're like, oh, and you don't even have to hit all of them. If I just hit, like, 3 of them,
sure.
it's like a 1-mana Glorious Anthem
mm-hmm.
for my team.
Yep.
Oh my gosh,
yeah.
this is so cool.
Exactly.
And, yeah, it's exactly the problem you're noting, though,
mm-hmm.
is that, yeah, what if you draw this on turn 4.
Yeah.
Even. Like, not
yeah,
even that
exactly.
late.
Right.
It's like, ugh.
Feels real bad.
Now what do I do?
Yeah, exactly.
I have a 4-drop I need to play. And then, like, what, I'm going to play this on turn 5?
It's good loot fodder if you're tempting.
I mean,
at that point.
That is a thing that does exist. I mean, green's not the best at
doing
that.
That's not what they're doing.
And as, you know, you and I have heard from various people,
yeah.
green is not good.
No.
That's one thing, like, even if you're not that aware, when you start drafting and you see it's, you know, there's 4 cards left in the pack and they're all green.
Yeah.
That's a thing
that
exists.
That's a good sign, right?
Yep. Yeah. Okay. So let's talk about some more sad green cards, maybe. this one is Brandywine Farmer. Mm. I felt kind of vindicated because I did not like green very much.
Yeah, I wasn't too high on it either.
So Brandywine Farmer is 2 and a green, 1/1 for a halfling peasant. When it ETBs, you make a food token. So this was one of green's themes, is food. The food tokens are artifacts. You pay 2, sacrifice, mm-hmm. and you gain 3 life. Boy, I am just so underwhelmed by this entire package. But especially, again, just like Fire Inscription, I'm paying 3 mana, and what am I getting?
That's fair.
A 1/1 creature.
Yeah.
Yes, it comes with a food token. Yes, there are food synergies. But ultimately, as far as like what am I doing on the board, I'm paying 3 mana for a 1/1 creature.
Yeah, that's tough.
I felt very solid about giving this a D or F. They give it a C, and so did you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I stand by this wholeheartedly. I think this is an absolute F.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's obviously not helped by the rest of green not being good, but I think this contributes to green not being good. And, like, this is, you know, you compare this green common for 2 and a green to Dunlin Crabane, which gives you a 1/1 flying body, and instead of a food, it gives you a 2/2 orc.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's just such a world of difference between those two cards.
Absolutely. Yeah, I cannot disagree with you on that one. I left it as my C minus. That's typically what I start a common with, and I don't know. I thought, well, I'll leave it because, yeah, it's the food theme, and yeah, green just doesn't, it's not where it's at for the set here, so.
I mean, it's the same thing I was saying with Ring Tempting. It's like, you want to believe in the design team. It's like, if they are saying this is a theme, I want to believe that it's good enough.
Yeah.
And this just feels, I don't know, it's just so nerfed, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, when you think of hobbits, what do you think of? Like, I mean, there's literally cards like Second Breakfast and stuff like that. So you're like, oh, food. Yeah, they're going to make food work. But I didn't see it in my card review, just from the gameplay that I have seen for some YouTube videos that I've seen. I have not seen that actually be successful. That sounds like you have not seen that either.
Not really. From your experience. It can come together. Mm-hmm. It's not that it can never work, and sure. I've been beaten by these decks before.
Oh, sure, sure.
It's mostly just like, it's just so hard to make it come together.
Yeah.
And you need a lot of, you need to know that you're the green drafter who's going to get hooked up with all the green stuff.
Sure.
Along that same route, there is Entish Restoration.
Mm.
2 and a green, instant. This is a card I like, just reading it. Sacrifice a land, search a library for up to 2 basic land cards, put them onto the battlefield tapped, and shuffle.
Okay.
But if you control a creature with power 4 or greater, instead search for up to 3 basic land cards, put them into play tapped. So, you know, it's a, what was the card? Harrow, I think it is.
Yeah, yeah.
It's that, but maybe even better than that. It's a, you know, just, if I just look at the card and ignore everything else,
sure.
I'm like, wow, that is really cool, actually. Yeah. I think that's really good. The issue I was having is, as I was scrolling through the set review, the curve just doesn't go that high.
No, it truly doesn't.
The top end is not that far off from your 3 mana spells.
Mm-hmm.
And so I just, every time I saw, like, Woe's Pathfinder, these are cards that I ordinarily would be giving great grades to.
Sure.
But what are we ramping into? Like, what are we trying to make happen with these cards?
Mm-hmm.
I still give it an okay grade. I give it a C+, but it's not the B that LR gave it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would agree with that. I saw this more. I think this is just kind of how I've kind of changed over our reviews. I look at more opportunities for fixing at that point. And this is a really good opportunity to fix. If you're going towards like multicolor nonsense or whatever. I know there's a couple Wooburg cards. I know the one. There might be another one. I can't remember.
So Tom Bombadil is Wooburg.
Yes.
Then there's Aragorn the Uniter, who is Wooburg.
Okay, no black. Yeah. Okay, yeah. So,
and then lots of 3-color legends.
Sure. So this opens the door to be able to do that a little bit easier.
Yeah.
For sure. So,
yeah, I think if you're in that style of deck, then this card gets very interesting.
Exactly. But that's a pretty narrow focus, right? Yeah. So,
it's not where you want your 3 mana uncommon premium spell to be.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yep. Okay, so I think we can start rounding out here with our classic Garbo colorless.
I need to learn for my artifacts.
Hey, man, you and me both.
Oh, man.
So the first one we have noted, you have noted,
oh, of course.
I think, yes, is Wizards Rockets.
Yeah.
So
the classic.
So how about I read this one?
Sure.
One mana of any color. Artifact ETBs tapped. You pay X and tap. Sacrifice it. Tap X mana in any combination of colors. And when you put it in the graveyard, you draw a card. So this is sort of colorless fixing.
Yeah.
Kind of painless, sure. Colorless fixing.
Yeah.
And you gave it a C+, I gave it a C-, they gave it a D or F.
Sure.
yeah. It's kind of what you said already.
Yeah, we both have our artifact vices. This is just the one that I like. So this isn't really the mana rock. It's not that. So I will concede that. But I don't know. It replaces itself. I don't know. It's one of those things where, again, it kind of goes back to the fixing element there. So play this on turn one. It's usually fairly harmless. And then you are hurting for another. Well, kind of going back to my experience with Arena, I never seem to get the color that I need for my lands, yeah. Even though I feel like everything's balanced. I'm like half and half on my split of lands. Say I'm two colors and stuff. And I always seem to get one of them, but I never get the other one. This would help that. So
this card, I think, actually is higher than was rated by LR.
Mm, okay.
I've used this card. I've seen other people use this card. If you are trying to enact some nonsense, like three-color decks are not uncommon in this set, and the fixing's not great.
Right.
The fixing is basically land cyclers.
Mm-hmm.
Or you get the Great Hall that can fix for legendary spells. But that's a very specific deck.
Right.
If you're going some three-color stuff, this, like you said, it's fairly low investment.
Sure.
It's one mana to cast. Oftentimes, especially in a nonsense deck, you're not doing anything on turn one.
Right.
It replaces itself, like you said. It actually does enough, I think.
Sure.
This is not a high-priority pick. If you're in the nonsense deck and you want some Wizards Rockets, believe me, you're going to be able to go to town.
It'll be fine. Yep.
Not that big a deal. So my vice is this style of card, Mirror of Galadriel. And you can read my shame on this
one. All right. So this is 2 mana for an uncommon legendary artifact. Pay 5 and tap, scry 1, then draw a card. This ability costs 1 less to activate for each legendary creature you control. Yep, I totally understand why this is your vice for artifacts when it comes to this. So, especially in this set here with the context, right? So, not only are there a lot of legendaries just inherently within this set.
At uncommon,
yeah, of course. Tempting. Creates a legendary. It's just going to keep fueling that, right? So, very easily I can see this, you know, like paying 2, paying 3, you know. I don't know what your threshold would be to say, like, what that number is that you're like, yeah, this is where I'm all in.
Right, but like, if I was just looking at this card, and instead of having this cost reduction, what is the mana cost to tap it that I would like?
Mm-hmm.
That's a good question.
Yeah.
Probably 3, I think, would be, like, the line for me.
And you already have I guess that's technically not... it's legendary creature, so yes. it does not fuel itself.
You need 2 to hit that threshold.
But I still say it's fairly easy to hit the, like you said, hit 3. Because that just means 2 legendary creatures. Again, if you're tempting, there's 1 after your first tempt. And then it's very easy to get another legendary at that point. So I think you can hit it fairly easily. So I get where you're coming from. You're not going to get any backlash from me by any means on this one.
I mean, you are on the right side of history on this one. This card is not very good. When my opponent casts this against me, I'm like, oh, you poor little boy.
Sure.
Like, why are you doing this?
Mm-hmm.
And as with many things, like, this is also, in a way, me overlooking Ring Tempting because it's just so easy to filter through your hand with Ring Tempting and looting. That it's like, I don't need to be spending a card and turns and mana to churn through my deck when I'm just already naturally doing it and attacking my opponent and advancing my board state at the same time.
This is a bit redundant at that point.
So it really suffers from that,
I
think.
That's fair.
Okay. That brings us to the pivotal moment. How do you think we did here?
You know, like, I think I was telling you about this a little bit earlier. It's like, the more I do this, the more insane I feel. I just feel like I am getting so much further out of, like, this is how Magic plays.
Last set, we were very close.
I know. We truly were.
I see what you're saying.
I tell you what, I think that my number will be very far off just because I will take these mechanics, and it truly is like it comes down to that, right? So like, if you can match the mechanics and like you're on board with certain mechanics, the same ones like the LR boys are, and not on some of them, it really makes a huge difference, right?
Yeah.
So I overall don't feel like... I got the ring tempting because it's like that's a natural one. It's like, God, they've got to make this work or else we're in bad shape here, right?
Yeah.
So I was like, yep, that one's good.
Unless I fully misunderstood what this thing does.
Exactly. I don't like a mask. That's my personal bias. And it seems like they like them
better
than me.
It's better than you think.
Yeah. So that was like anything, it seems like anything to do with tokens, I'm generally lower on because I'm like, I don't want this vanilla crap going on here. So give me the chocolate or give me like something else here with a lot more flavor to it. So that's a big mechanic here on this one. So I was off on that one. So I think I'm going to be further off on this one, like from the number. But I don't know how we're going to do in relation to each other, so I'm curious.
Well, one way to find out.
All right, let's see it. Ooh!
Final score. Right. Not that far off.
No.
Seth, 210. Kenny, 191.
Right.
Not one of our biggest splits that we've seen, actually.
Yeah.
It's interesting. I think these are two fairly good scores overall.
Actually, I think they are.
Which makes sense if we're going to be close, because I had the feeling when I was recording LR's grades and going through, it's like, man, I don't know that I've ever had so many ones and zeros, especially in strings.
Mm-hmm.
Don't look too carefully in here. There's some strings where that does not happen, and we've talked about some of those cards, obviously. but yeah, this one, I think what helped in this one for us to keep our scores relatively low and on track with LR is this is much more of a kind of return to core set principles. Power level is lower than in the last few sets as well. I don't know if you were getting that vibe, but I definitely was.
Sure.
Whereas, like, I'm not being, like, blown away by the power. Like, the fact that it's like, wow, black has some of the most insane comments in the set. This 1-1 that makes a 2-2.
Yeah, that's fair.
Whoa.
Yeah, yeah.
That's kind of how it feels.
That's fair.
I would say, having played it, it's a fun set. It's worth playing. Especially if you like popper sets. This is the most poppery set I've seen in a long time.
Okay.
I was texting you most recently. I trophied with a completely rare free Grixis deck.
That's cool. That felt really great.
Yeah. It really did feel good. Yeah. Whereas like, and people were playing their rares against me, and I'm just beating it with my rough and tumble commons and uncommons, and you feel like a real champion about it.
That's fun.
So it's worth checking out. Go check it out. Seth, thanks for joining me today.
My pleasure. Happy to be here.